Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. American, all the chips in the PC. It is Saturday, the 11th day of August, Anno Domini 2018, and you, you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 6 minutes after the hour, we're going to be bringing you news, views, things to choose, nothing to lose. Kick off your shoes, here comes the blues. No, here comes the news, don't get the blues. Wow. Okay, cheaper payments.
Well, after 30 years, you're bound to mess up once.
You got to give me one. Cheaper payment systems may cost businesses less, but they could have wound up costing customers more. That's the word from a pair of security researchers who discovered that mobile payment systems have vulnerabilities that could let hackers steal credit card info or change the value of what people pay. Point-of-sales terminals such as credit card readers are increasingly a common target for hackers since that's where the money is. Cyber criminals can steal troves of financial data from weak cybersecurity on these terminals, and attacks on systems have affected millions of people at hotels, stores, and restaurants. The attackers are specifically looking at inexpensive card readers, which have exploded in popularity as small businesses like your local food truck use them to accept non-cash payments. These mobile readers often attach to another device, like a smartphone or a tablet. Researchers estimate that 46% of all non-cash payments will be done through a mobile reader by 2019. Jeez and crackers. Researchers looked at readers from the most popular mobile point-of-sale or MPOS providers in the U.S. and Europe. That's Square, PayPal, SumUp, and iZettle. The researchers said they wanted to examine how much security there was in mobile readers that cost less than $50. It turns out, physically, they're really hard to get into, but as far as cybersecurity goes, not so much. Three of the readers mentioned had a flaw that could have let a dishonest merchant change what customers see on the screen. Now, let me point out that that's a dishonest merchant. That's not a far off remote break-in. That means the device could show that a transaction failed when it really didn't and prompt customers to pay twice. The vulnerability opened up various possibilities for merchants to steal from customers. Display could also be adjusted to ask customers to use the magnetic stripe on the credit card instead of the more secure chip. That would make victims vulnerable to attacks already associated with swiping cards. Many MPOS terminals use Bluetooth to connect to devices, and of course, researchers found that most of them didn't use any secure form of pairing. In a secure protocol, Bluetooth devices could be associated with a password or with a notification that lets people know what gadgets they're connected to wirelessly. Researchers said this wasn't being implemented in the readers they looked at. The vulnerabilities hadn't been used in any attacks yet, the researchers said. If you're concerned, your best bet is to stay away from swipe transactions and stick to security chips, which offer a better protection. Also, in general, if you are swiping and that swiper is actually physically connected to a phone or tablet, you're pretty safe. So our poll of the week at soundbites.org, that is Bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, is mobile point-of-sale systems are vulnerable to attack. And your choices are, I never buy things through a mobile payment, I'm careful, I don't care, they're already got all my data, and I never leave my house. So far we've got 27 votes, and I never buy things through mobile payment is first, followed by I never leave my house, which would explain why you never buy things through mobile payment. And I know you'll have more to say on this. So if you scroll down on the right under Fascinating Stuff, you will see the forums. The second forum down is the poll discussion. Currently, at least, the first item under poll discussions is somehow the second item down, which is interesting. 11 August 18. Mobile point-of-sale systems are vulnerable to attack. I don't know why that's second. Oh, yes, I do, because I answered somebody else's question about it, a different one. And so you can join in the discussion there. And, of course, You can always give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Or toll free at 1-800-790-0415.
And you always want to pay attention to the card reader you use anyway, to just to make sure there's not a skimmer on it. There have been a lot of problems at ATMs and self-serve gas stations where the bad guy just puts a second reader in front of the first reader. So you put your card in the slot, and the bad guy gets all the information off of it, too.
There's at least, I don't know if there's one for Apple. I'm sure there is. But I've got an app for Android that called Skimmer Scanner. And it there are when somebody puts one of those scanners on a skimmer on a scanner, it saves the stuff until they walk by and give it a signal, and this thing gives the signal.
Ah.
So you can see whether or not it responds. It may
now,
not.
The earlier ones, the bad guy actually had to come and pick it up again to dump the data out of it.
Right, right. Now they can drive up, scan it, and leave and get all the data. But this thing will do that for you and then dump it. So if you're somewhere and you don't necessarily trust that it's secure, you can do that by just downloading an app called Skimmer Scammer. Skimmer Scanner. That's not easy to say.
I had my credit card number stolen for the first time ever last week.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
And I didn't do anything out of the ordinary that I can think of, so I don't know what happened.
But right.
I still haven't got my new card yet, and it's a pain having to go to the bank all the time.
Holy moly, that's the worst part.
Yeah. I have to, all the automatic payments that I have to change, a few of them have already hit my account and been denied because I don't have my new card yet, and it's a pain.
Yep.
So who was breached that my card number was part of?
Right. Yeah. Either somebody was breached or somebody at like a restaurant or whatever.
Yeah.
But you never know, and you'll probably never know, frankly.
Yep. That did, I was able to trace down one of the charges that did make it through, and turned out to be a computer outdoor kind of bag company. Really nice looking bags.
So, you wouldn't mind having actually bought
that. I know. So maybe we should, yeah. So they were able to find the fraudulent order and refund me, but it's a very annoying pain in the
neck.
The posterior.
Yeah, I'm there too. Yeah.
The way from the neck to the posterior.
Straight down, all the way from the top to the bottom.
Yeah.
All right, to the phones. Our first caller is Smiley from Rochester, New York. Hi, Smiley, what's up?
Okay, on the website that I, Linux, form that I'm on, they mentioned this application or program called Pi-hole, and I went to their site, and to me it sounds like a vacuum cleaner, which can suck all the ads off of the, you know, once you install this Pi-hole, it'll suck all the ads off of the website that you're at so you don't get bothered.
What's it called? Pi-hole?
Yeah, P-I-H-O-L-E.
I
guess they've got it for Androids, Macs, Linux.
There are a lot of different ad blockers available for different OSs and different web browsers. The problem is so many websites are funded by ads. The reason you can go to a website for free is that the ad pays for it. So by putting an ad blocker on, more and more websites are being forced to go to paywall. So you can't look at that website without paying them money directly. We're trying to hopefully figure out a way to distinguish the good ads from the bad ads so that we keep the bad ads out and let the good ads through. Google had a project for a while, but it's sort of on hiatus where since Google is the biggest advertiser as well as the biggest right. search engine, they had this thing where you pay them like $5 a month and they hide the ads for you. But the people that would have gotten paid for those ads still get paid. So you can choose which ads you want to allow through on the websites you do want to support.
I think this is different. I think this is one of those, it's like a startup program, I think, and it's got its own site.
Right, right. Basically,
PieHole.com, and down at the bottom, they're trying to raise money.
Right.
And it shows how much they've already raised so far.
Right, because they have a Patreon thing going on and all of that. Here's the thing. What it does is there's a thing called DNS, Domain Name Services. And this is how you go from Google.com to 179.53.22.48 or whatever the number is. Instead of having to remember 179.22 whatever, you just type in Google.com. And the way you do that is you type in Google.com, your computer goes into a domain name server and says, where the heck is Google.com? And it sends back that 129 or whatever the number is. What PieHole does is, and that's true for every single thing you send out over the internet. So if you go to soundbites.org and every link on that page, if I have ads on that page, all those ads also, your system goes to a DNS server to find out where that ad really is and go load it. So consequently, the way PieHole works is if your browser requests a site that's known to be serving ads, it blocks it.
And you can almost do a little of that yourself. One of the tricks is to put doubleclick.net, one of the biggest advertisers, in your host file and point it to null.
Right.
And that'll block a lot of ads.
There's two things where that won't work. One is if I load the ads onto my machine. Let's say on Soundbites, if somebody paid me to be advertised on my site, I could then load that ad on my machine and you'd get it anyway.
Right. A first party ad versus a third party ad.
Right. And that's the main way. And the other way is to just use an ad service that they're not blocking. The big thing, as Steve said, is that so much, it costs money to run a website. I'm sorry, that's just the way it is. And many of us honestly can't afford to just continue paying for websites so that other people can go to them for free. That's why my websites have a donate button on them, because I...
As well as ads, because you don't get enough through donations.
Because nobody's looking at the ads anymore. I used to get a decent amount of money from Google Ads, and consequently, I didn't have a donate button.
Yep.
Now I don't make money off of Google Ads. I have a donate button, and nobody donates anyway. So, at some point I may just decide I just can't afford this anymore. And that's going to happen to every place you love on the internet, because we are conditioned to want stuff that's free.
And that's why you're seeing a rise in companies like Patreon,
right,
where you can get a crowdfunding website so that you can become a patron of this site, which, the way it used to work.
Right.
And the site can get money to operate.
Right. And I get that nobody wants to see ads. I also get that many of us simply are just going to have to stop putting out websites because it costs us money to do so and nobody's paying us to do it. So it's a catch-22, and I get that. But
in fact, there was a big sort of controversy in the iOS world when Apple allowed third-party plugins to Safari, and one of the first things people wrote were ad blockers.
Right.
And one of the guys that wrote the most popular ad blocker, and he was only charging $5 for it, a week or two later, he refunded everybody's money and posted a blog saying, the more I think about it, my site is based on ads. I shouldn't be blocking ads.
Yeah, exactly right.
Yeah.
All right, okay. Thanks, Smiley.
Okay.
Have fun. We're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It's 19 minutes after the hour. It's Soundbites. It's member-supported Jazz 90.1.
I'm Steve Wozniak, and you're listening to Soundbites.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 24 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. Before we go back to the phones, first I want to say happy birthday to Mr. Steve Wozniak. He's 68 years old today. You heard his voice. Talking about Soundbites there a moment ago. And I do want to say that just as an example from the last segment, I get about 800 hits every day on Security Tango, and I make almost zero money off of it. It used to be I'd make a couple of bucks a day. I wasn't making
not barely enough to pay for the service.
But it paid for the service, right? It's about what it did every month. Now it pays nothing, and it's clearly ad blocker related. And so, at some point, I'm just going to say it's not worth my while. It's too bad. Everybody loves it. People talk about it all the time. But I'm retired. I'm not a charity anymore. So that's why we tell people. I always feel hypocritical talking about ad blockers, but. I get it. People are annoyed. Ads are annoying. I do understand that entirely. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Vic from Rochester, New York. Hi, Vic. What's up?
Well, that's Mitt, MIT.
Okay.
As in Mitt Yelich.
Oh, hiya, Mitt. How are you? Sorry, I misheard Steve. Dave, I apologize. How are you?
You misheard. You don't know who.
Right. I don't know who I heard, but I misheard them, whoever they were. What's up?
Well, I got two questions about Chrome.
Yeah.
Number one, whenever I type the letter T, well, not every time, it opens up a new tab.
Right.
Secondly, I've been seeing these ads for antivirus for Chrome and wondering if that's any worth getting.
All right. Okay. First, the typing the T gives you a new tab. Normally, you get a tab when you type Control T. So either you are holding down the Control key or your Control key is stuck.
No. Because it doesn't happen all the time. It's just I'll be typing something on Facebook and I'll use the word Z and all of a sudden I'm in a new tab.
Right, right. And so what I'm saying is that you either have an intermittent problem with your control key, or it could be there's dirt under it or, whatever. But we see that sometimes, and it's because somehow the control key is being activated when you type that T. It could be the way you type. It could be your finger hits it accidentally. It could be there's a piece of crumb under there that sometimes makes it happen. It could be any one of those kinds of things, but it's generally that does it. As for the Chrome AV... A separate antivirus program specific to Chrome is unnecessary if you're already running a good antivirus program in your operating system, whether that's Windows or Linux or Mac.
My operating system is Chrome.
Oh, right, because you're on
a Chrome box.
Right, you're on a Chrome box. In that case, you really don't have to worry about it. Because the reality is that Chrome right now, at least the Chrome operating system, is not susceptible to any of the viruses or malware that's out there on the internet. Now, that's not to say you can't be fooled, right? Because you can still get those pop-ups that say, your machine is infected, call Microsoft right away. But you're smart enough to know that is just it's nonsense that's popping up on your screen and ignoring it. But in terms of an actual antivirus program for Chrome, the Chrome OS, that isn't necessary yet. It may be in the future, but at the moment, there are no viruses that can infect a Chrome book or box or whatever. So if you feel that you have, because there's no way that it can actually harm or change, rather, the operating system. So if you feel you have been somehow infected, reboot.
Well, I'm pretty sure that was the case, but like I said, I started getting these ads on Facebook saying there's virus for Chrome, and just wondering if it was just pretty much a money extractor or not.
Yes, it's pretty much what it is. At this point, at least, it's just a way of getting your money.
Okay. Thank you very much, Nick.
Thanks, man. Have fun.
You too. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Now, there are occasionally malicious Chrome extensions, but Google usually finds those and removes them from you by itself.
Right. And so
that's a little disconcerting. They can reach in and remove something from your computer.
They can all do it. Apple did it. Apple does it. Everybody does it. So, yeah, it is a little disconcerting, but they all can do it, and we know that.
And they only use their powers for good.
So far, that we know of. There's a Chromebook. When it boots up, there are two copies of the operating system on the Chromebook or box, a Chrome stick or whatever version you have of the Chrome operating system. There are two versions of it in memory, and they are matched again. One of them is read-only. It cannot be written to by the computer.
Nothing can touch it.
Nothing can touch it. So the two of them are compared when you boot up the system. That's most of what takes the 8 seconds of booting time. It compares the two of them. If there is a discrepancy, then it goes to the tiebreaker, which is a secret site on the web that nobody at this point at least knows about, and checks against the one on the web. So at this point at least, if you did get and if it finds that there is a discrepancy, that, for example, the locked version agrees with the web version, but the running version is different, it downloads the web version and replaces the running version. So even if you got a virus, rebooting would remove it from your system automatically. That's one of the beauties of the Chrome operating system. Even if you get a virus, you reboot and it's gone. Done.
Yeah.
But like I said, right now there is no virus that can permanently damage Chrome OS. Now, again, you can get those pop-up things that say, you've got a virus, call. I got one here.
Yeah, you got one right here while we're doing the show that said your Windows machine is infected.
Right.
And it's like, oh, really?
Yeah,
cool.
I'm pretty sure that's not the case because I'm running a Chromebook. But that goes right back to our first segment. That's why many people want to have ad blockers, because malicious stuff comes through ad blockers. Mm-hmm. Through ads, and I get that, but it's a tragedy of the commons. It ruins it for everybody. But right now, at least, there is no way to infect a Chrome book or Chrome box or any of the Chrome type devices. Now, Chrome box, you all know what Chrome books are. That's a laptop that runs the Chrome operating system. A Chrome box is essentially a little desktop. It looks like a hockey puck. They're little tiny boxes, and you just plug in a monitor and a keyboard and a mouse, and it now runs that Chrome operating system as your desktop. And you can plug in a wired connection to it or a wireless and run it on your network. I know a number of people who are doing that because most people, quite honestly, don't need more than that.
And you're seeing more of them in the stores, Chrome
books and boxes.
Yep. Because the big box, as far as computing, unless you're a gamer, you really don't need it.
Right.
You've got to have it to where you can, install specific software, then yeah, you got to have a regular laptop. But otherwise, for most folks that are doing, the typical going on the internet, searching the web, doing emails, editing photos, and listening to music and all that, Chromebook does it.
And they're generally cheaper than, I hate to say regular laptop, because they are regular laptops, but a general purpose laptop. Mm-hmm. Which for the general public, their purpose is web and email and Facebook and games. And,
right. Yeah. So you're often paying twice or three times as much for a laptop that you honestly don't do more with.
Mm-hmm.
Right. I mean, yes, if you're a high end gamer or you're doing some very high end. I do audio editing and graphic editing on this all the time, but it's not high end.
Right.
Right. So but if you're doing high end stuff, then you absolutely need a laptop. But a real computer, whether it's a laptop or a desktop. But for most people, email, surfing, some light writing and spreadsheet stuff, and I've done some pretty extensive spreadsheets on Google Docs. But for all of that stuff, you don't need more than a Chromebook. It's easy, it's cheap, it's lightweight, it boots up in seconds, and you're done. It's a pretty cool toy, I got to be honest.
We often ask people in our store if they're working on billable hours. And if you know what that means, you need a fast, expensive computer. Do you bill by the hour? Can you get more work done in an hour and therefore bill more people more? And then you want a faster computer.
Yep, absolutely right. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller, I believe, is Brunt from Irondequoit, New York. Have I got that right?
Yeah, you're talking to me.
Yeah, what's up?
No, it's Brent.
Yeah, okay, what's up?
On your last subject, which was the Chromebook.
Yep.
I have a question about certain companies that are offering security for Chromebooks.
Yeah.
I think that sounds a little funny.
Yep, it's exactly what we were just talking about. The basic idea behind a Chromebook is that it is already proof against the current crop of viruses and malware in general.
I got the radio on. I got to turn it off.
Yeah, you do.
Current crop of viruses.
Malware. Yeah, there you go. Right now the Chromebooks are proof against any of the current crop of malware that's out there. That doesn't necessarily mean it will be so in the future, but we'll certainly report that if it becomes a thing. But right now, the way the Chromebooks are designed and built, they are not vulnerable to any infection. Like I said, you can get a momentary hit from some sort of ad on the web or a malicious site that you accidentally go to or whatever. That can happen, but a reboot means that you're clean again. So purchasing some additional security for a Chromebook, I'm not sure what you can get.
Yeah.
In terms of keeping your, banking or whatever that is, as long as you're going to a site that is secure, HTTPS site, and it says secure in the address bar at the top in green with the little green lock. As long as it says all of that, you're good. You are clean.
Well, on that, this company said they are 100% sure to cure your Chromebook from anything. So
they're just going to collect your money, sit back, and do nothing.
Listen, if you want to make sure your Chromebook is clean, send me $50.
Yep.
Just reboot it, that's all.
Yeah, because your Chromebook is already clean, but I will happily take your $50 and tell you that your Chromebook is clean, because I know it already is. Yeah.
There are,
and that's all these people are doing, Brent.
Yeah.
I wouldn't get excited about it one way or the other.
Okay, I won't. Thank you, Ron.
All right, thank you.
There are a couple of interesting extensions that can sometimes be helpful. Avast has one that will check for malicious websites. So if you type in or accidentally click a link to a malicious website, it can stop and prevent you from going there to begin with. But Google has their own list and pretty much does that by themselves.
And as far as the Chromebook, until they find a way to find that hidden and read-only protected file that Chrome compares itself against, nobody's going to get at it, and that's its own built-in security system right there.
Right, and there is this great program called Web of Trust that you can install on any Chrome browser, and I think it works for Firefox and Safari as well, although I don't know.
Yeah.
But it's just an extension that you add, just like you add any other extension. It's called Web of Trust. And it puts a little green circle if it's a trusted site, and a red circle if it's a non-trusted site, and a gray circle if they don't know, next to the actual link. So it's pretty cool. We're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes, Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, you. It's 39 minutes after the hour. It's Soundbites. It's member-supported Jazz 90.1.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more Soundbites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 44 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. It seems Apple shipped the latest refresh of the MacBook Pro with a few gremlins left to work out. Last month, it was the Core i9 throttling performance. Now some owners are experiencing crackling audio through the built-in speakers. When you spend upwards of $1,300 on a laptop, you expect it to work flawlessly from day one and hopefully for its entire lifespan. And that should be a long lifespan. With the recent release of the 2018 MacBook Pro, that's certainly not the case, with another fault, this time involving audio output, appearing for some owners. Last month, it was discovered that the Core i9 MacBook Pro was experiencing cooling problems that killed performance. Apple investigated and discovered there was a performance throttling problem and issued a fix. Thankfully, all that was required is a firmware patch. But now there's another problem, and it may not be so easy to solve. Multiple videos are appearing of MacBook Pro owners playing audio through the built-in speakers on the laptop and experiencing crackling sounds. The severity varies greatly, but you can't fail to notice it as the music plays. The crackling doesn't seem to be software or service related, as it is being experienced when audio is played through iTunes, YouTube, GarageBand, or when running Windows via Bootcamp.
The best GarageBand. GarageBand.
What did I say?
GarageBand.
I said GarageBand?
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Some of the music I've heard from it?
Yes.
Okay.
I thought I heard garbage can.
Garbage can. Yeah. GarageBand.
It says GarageBand.
It says GarageBand. I don't know what I thought I was reading. I wrote GarageBand. Yeah, you would think I would have.
A lot of garbage in the garage.
A lot of garbage in my garage. And like I said, some of the music I've heard from GarageBand. The best guesses for the cause so far include a radio interference through a lack of shielding in the MacBook Pro, audio drivers not working correctly, faulty speakers, or the new Apple T2 chip, which, among other things, is the audio controller for the MacBook Pro. Owners and Apple will be hoping that's a problem that can be fixed with a software update. If it does turn out to be a lack of shielding or faulty T2 chips, then it's a big headache for Apple, who would probably have to offer free repairs to anyone experiencing the crackling. No doubt Apple is looking into the fault, which does not seem to be that widespread at the moment, although there are a bunch of YouTube videos and a lot of noise about it. In absolute numbers, it's not a lot of people so far.
Crackling noise.
Crackling noise. Oh, what?
There's a lot of crackling noise.
A lot of crackling noise about it, exactly. So it could just be one bad batch of hardware. Anyway, how's your MacBook Pro? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299. Toll free, 1-800-790-0415.
Yeah, it could have been just a, you know, one, like you said, one batch of chips.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
That could have been
a grounding issue, even maybe.
Yeah,
sure. Or it could be a manufacturing issue on
the way it was service mounted.
Right.
But at least we think they fixed the keyboard.
We do think they fixed the keyboard.
Well, that's good.
And we do know they fixed the throttling issue with a firmware update.
Yep.
So now there's this problem, and you know, any new laptop is going to have issues, and this is a new laptop. It's not just a slight upgrade to an old laptop. It's a fairly new design. And so with the T2 chip and
completely
all of that.
Completely new Intel chipset inside with
right,
the next generation.
Right. And so there are bound to be some issues. And, you know, so far, although Apple was fairly reluctant to admit the keyboard issue, they have fixed them all. So we'll see how long this one takes to be acknowledged and fixed. If it does turn out to be a fairly small group of people due to a bad batch of chips somewhere along the line, that's I think the least painful for Apple.
And that's where it's the hardest thing is, you know, is this problem, two or three loudmouths on the internet, or is it actually a problem in the computer in general, or is it just their specific units?
Right, and you would suspect, you would hope that they did a bunch of QA mm-hmm. testing, quality assurance testing for this device. So if they never saw it,
right,
then it is likely to be some sort of bad batch of chips somewhere along the line.
And one of the things I see all the time is people start, they put all these complaints on the internet, but they never actually took it to Apple. Take it into the store, have them look at it. And so Apple can't say there's a problem until they get reports of the problem. Random people posting on YouTube aren't reports of the problem.
Right. Because, you know, anybody can post anything on YouTube. We've seen all kinds of things that were lies on YouTube.
We're on YouTube ourselves.
Right.
Right now.
Right. Yeah. So, yes, clearly you cannot trust YouTube.
Yeah.
Hi, YouTube. If you are experiencing any sort of problem, the first line of defense, take it to a reputable dealer who will certainly escalate the problem to the manufacturer.
Especially these 2018s, which are all still under warranty.
Yeah. It's not like it's a five-year-old Mac and you're worried that it's going to cost you anything. If it's an actual problem, it's a warranty repair at
this point.
But the longer you wait, the longer, if it goes
time's
off warranty, you're on your own.
And it's better to get it noted that you've got an issue. So in case all of a sudden it stops and then it comes back, and you're on record as, registering that there was an issue.
Right.
Yep.
Right. All right. Back to the phones. Our next caller is Scotty from Greece, New York. Hi, Scotty. What's up?
Hi, Nick. Thank you very much for taking my call.
Sure.
I heard a little earlier on the one point. This skimmer scammer. I want to check that out because it's all this ID snagging and stuff is a major concern. So I appreciate you mentioning that.
Sure.
But the reason why I'm calling is I wanted to give you guys a big thank you. I have a small business. I'm a handyman here in Greece, and so I'm constantly getting these robocalls. So you guys told me about Intercept Tones, and I found on the web. I think you gave me the site where I downloaded on my outgoing message Vacant Circuit.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, and it's and my buddy and I, he calls me and he says, "Oh, I got Doodle D," because you hear Doodle D, So I was using that, and that was fantastic. But I don't work for Spectrum, but I found out about Spectrum service because I am a customer, and they set me up with my account, and all I get is like one ring, and then the robocall bounces.
Right.
So, I was getting like 50 calls in like between 3 to 5 days. I'd look at my phone and how many calls came in. It was like unbelievable.
Yep.
And now they call it, and what they'll do is they'll call, and if they get by, they get around Spectrum because these guys are smart.
Yeah.
They get around Spectrum. They run into my vacant circuit, and my call levels have just went down to where it was annoying to right now. It's very manageable.
Excellent. Now this is on your Spectrum phone, right? Your essentially landline.
Yeah, the landline. Yeah,
Right. The nice thing about the vacant circuit tones is you can also put them on your outgoing message on your phone.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, whatever. I remember
on
you
your cell phone.
I haven't forgotten. There's a litany of messages. I need to know the one where you tell the robot to self-destruct or to send a high voltage to the person who programmed you. Give them about 220 to 440 volts.
Right, there you go. But I'm glad that worked out for you. It's our pleasure.
Good.
Yeah, because some of the people that I watch them and I say, look, there's ways. As a matter of fact, I've got. On my website, I have techniques.
Right.
So I let people know, hey, I could set you up, so we'll push the robocalls right down to nothing.
Right.
Yep. And Spectrum uses a service called Nomo Robo. Which is available for all landlines and for free, and now for mobile phones for $1.99 a month.
Right, but you can also, like you said, set the vacant circuit number, that do 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 number on your phone.
Yeah, man.
Yep, and that's free, and that works. So, And yeah, and in terms of the skimmer scanner, that is a program that you can download from Google Play. It's for the Android phone. I don't know if it's available.
I didn't see one.
I don't know if it's available for Apple phones, but for iPhones. But basically what that app does is, like we said, there's fuel pump skimmers that can steal your credit or debit card information. And
do you know how to use it, Nick?
Well, yeah, it's really pretty simple. You just run. You have to have your Bluetooth turned on your phone because
okay.
It uses Bluetooth.
There we go. Okay.
Those things use Bluetooth.
All right.
So
okay,
you
gotcha.
Obviously have to have your Bluetooth turned on in order to detect it. And what this does is you run it near the pump because the Bluetooth has to be within about 10 feet, I think it is. And it will detect that there's Bluetooth coming off of that pump.
Device.
Which normally, of course, there wouldn't be. And so if you do happen to detect it, just let the station attendant know. Don't try to do anything about it yourself.
Yeah, I would report it. Heck yeah. I would be like, you know, because I see it on the news, you know, if you've been at this service station between, you know, this time and that time, well, you better call your credit card company.
Right. Now, it really won't detect all types of skimmers because there is a type that as Steve said, they have to remove the actual device in order to get the stuff from it that doesn't use Bluetooth. So it's obviously not 100% accurate. But most of them use Bluetooth so that the people can just, once they've taken the risk of installing it, they never have to take a risk again. They just drive close to it, you know, maybe even fill up their tank. While they're there, they suck all the stuff out of it, and you're on your way.
Yeah, it's sweet. It's sweet for those guys. I mean, geez.
Yeah, no kidding.
It's the wild, wild west in Cyberland, you know?
Yeah, it really is. And Steve says that there is, in fact, a version for iPhones, so you should be okay. And he's going to put up a link to both of them.
I just picked up a Note 4 so I could swap the batteries out. So I'll go to Google Play and I'll download that app.
There you go. It's called Skimmer Scam.
Sure, say that fast three times.
I can't even say it fast once. Skimmer Scanner. So you should be able to find it. And it works, like I said, it works specifically on the type that uses Bluetooth. Obviously, it doesn't do everything.
There's a lot of disclaimers on here. This can't detect all skimmers. This can't do this. This can't do that. Don't use it as your only protection. So the lawyers were involved in writing the ad copy.
Right. Clearly they were. Yeah. Yes. But it does work, and it is pretty cool. So thanks. Give it a shot, and I'm glad that the tones are working for you.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. And thank you very much for being on air.
Thank you. Have fun.
Okay.
Bye-bye. Yeah. I just turned off my mic. I don't know why. I don't know what I... Suddenly I thought I was running the board. I don't know what I'm doing.
You have one button and it went to your head.
Let me play the lion, too. Here's the thing. The whole idea behind these... tones, the vacant circuit tone or whatever it is that you use. We talked about this, I think it was last week. The basic idea is when you call a number that's no longer in service, it's an out of service, there's out of service tones, there's a vacant circuit tones, all kinds of different tones. And robocalls are designed to detect those. And if they detect one of those, they take the number out of service for a certain number of weeks or months, because calling a number that's not in service just wastes their time.
Wastes their time, yeah.
So if your message, your voicemail message starts with those tones, in this case, do-do-do, then you will find that you start getting fewer calls. It clearly doesn't kill them all.
Right.
But it does cut down on them. I've gone from 10 or 12 a day myself down to one every couple days.
Oh, did you see now that the scammers moved over to, instead of being in jail and, you know, for that they're going and saying your utility bill is overdue, and they want you to either pay with gift cards or a credit card.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Going through. Boy, they just don't give up, do they?
No, they will never give up, but there's money to be made. You know, you make 50 phone calls and one person sends you $100, you've made $100.
Yep.
You know, it's worth it. You make a
there's always
$500 or $600 a day. You're doing okay for yourself right there. All right, that music tells me you've wasted an hour of your life with this nonsense, but we know you're a slow learner, and you don't really have much to do. It's a Saturday afternoon in August, and so we're going to give you a whole nother hour of this nonsense. All you have to do is not go away, and we'll be back with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with me, Nick Francesco, and with you for a whole nother hour of the longest-running computer show in the known universe. That's right. We are Soundbites. Right here on the great and truly grateful to you, because we are solely member-supported, Jazz 90.1. We will see you on the other side.
Computer talk you can understand. More Sound Bites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
WGMC Greece, Rochester.
A public service of the Greece Central School District.
Jazz 90.1.
On Facebook at Jazz 901 FM.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 5 minutes after the hour, I don't think we actually know who we are, but we might possibly be Soundbites. And, of course, you can give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299. Toll free, 1-800-790-0415. Happy birthday to Steve Wozniak. He's 68 years old today.
All right, his birthday is coming, is now. And our birthday is coming up in 3 weeks.
Yep.
Be starting 30 years.
And then our birthday is after that. Yeah.
That's right. And then all our birthdays are after that.
It's a very cold January.
Or a heck of a Christmas.
Yeah.
All right. Here we are. You want to be careful.
Yeah, we've been here for the past hour.
Yeah. Hackers have been exploiting a vulnerability in D-Link modem routers to send people to fake banking websites that attempt to steal their login credentials. The vulnerabilities work against D-Link DSL2740R, DSL2640B, DSL2780B, DSL2730B, and DSL526B. Models that haven't been patched in the last 2 years. So if you have a modem, a router rather, log into it and update it. As described in disclosures, the flaw allows attackers to remotely change the DNS server that connected computers use to translate domain names into IP addresses. This is also something we talked about in the first hour. When you go to a website. We'll get to that. According to an advisory published yesterday morning by security firm Radware, hackers have been exploiting this vulnerability to send people trying to visit to Brazilian bank sites so far to malicious servers rather than the ones operated by the financial institutions. But if they can do it to Brazilian banks, they can do it to any bank. So update your router now. The user is completely unaware of the change. The hijacking works without crafting or changing URLs in the user's browser. A user can use any browser and his or her regular shortcuts. He or she can type in the URL manually or even use it from mobile devices as long as you're on wireless, such as iPhone or iPad or Android phones or tablets. He or she will still be sent to the malicious website instead of to their requested website, so the hijacking effectively works at the gateway level. Banco de Brasil's website can be accessed over unencrypted or unauthenticated HTTP connections, and that prevented visitors from receiving any warning the redirected sites were malicious. People who connected using the more secure HTTPS protocol did receive a warning from the browser that the digital certificate was self-signed, but most people would just say, okay, they don't know what that means or care about it. Other than the self-signed certificate, the site was a completely convincing spoof of the real site. If users logged in, their site credentials were sent to the hackers behind the campaign. In 2016, malware known as DNS Changer caused routers that were running unpatched firmware or were secured with weak administrative passwords to use a malicious DNS server. Connected computers would then connect to fake sites, but in that case, the router was reconfigured from within the home, not remotely, via the internet. The best defense against router attacks is to ensure devices are running the most up-to-date firmware and are secured with a strong password. A good defense in-depth move is also to configure each device that connects to use a trusted DNS service, such as 8.8.8.8 from Google or 8.8.4.4 from Google. These settings, which are made in the operating system of the connecting device, will override any settings made in the router. So is your router sending you to the right place? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free, 1-800-790-0415.
There's a new free DNS service that has a more security slant to it, where they keep track of malicious websites, and that's 9.9.9.9.
Right.
The Quad 9 service.
And there's also 1.1.1.1 from Cloudflare.
Yeah.
That I actually tried and didn't work. And so I was kicked off the internet for a while until I got it fixed. But
oops.
Better me than you. And
that's and what we're here for.
I'm back up. It's all working now. So you want to be careful. 8.8.8.8 and 8.8.4.4 are Google's DNS, public DNS servers. Anybody can use them. Anybody can set those up in their router to do that. If you are connected to the internet in your home, you have a router. Whether that router is from your internet service provider, such as Spectrum or Greenlight or whoever, or you have your own, you have one of those. And if you have one of your own, that's the one that's managing 99% of what you do. So log into it, which you should be able to do that based on the manual that came with it, which at the very least tells you how to log into it.
Or
then you need to change the password. That's the first thing you should do.
But the thing that is, just word to the folks, though, if you don't find the manual, don't panic. 99.75% of the time, if you flip the modem upside down, you will see a model number. You can go to the web and find that particular model and read the manual.
Right.
And if you haven't updated your router in the last couple of months, especially, you know, you should, because there was the VPN filter attack, now this new banking attack. And if your router doesn't have an update, throw it away and get a new one.
That is the truth.
You want to buy a router from a company that releases updates that fixes these problems.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Right.
And again, just like we tell folks, you should have different passwords for, various accounts. Periodically, even if it's every 6 months, that's twice a year, go in and change the password for your router. It'll get you in the habit of being familiar with just the basics. I mean, you don't have to turn into some big guru.
Yeah, don't go playing around in your router, but make sure it's got a secure password.
Yeah.
That's the one big thing to do.
Yeah, don't go with the default. Just go in there, and usually it'll say, the password, and you can go in and change it twice a year. If in doubt, again, you can go to the manual, and it will tell you, walk you through step by step on how to go through there and change the password from the default one to something that's a little more secure, because 99% of the folks, it's up there, and they leave the default.
Right.
And
which is generally admin.
Yeah.
Well,
I have customers that are always amazed that I can log into their router.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, you never change the password.
He never locked it down.
Or worse, it's printed on the bottom of the router. Well, I guess that isn't too bad because then you have...
They have to break into your home.
Yeah. That's
which
okay.
Which is a different thing to worry about, right?
Yeah, because that's what we used to do. When we set up anybody's router, we would always change the password and we would tape it to the bottom of the router.
Right. And that actually makes sense to me because, like I said, if it's in a home, they have to break into your home and then you got more things to worry about than them using your internet.
Yep.
So yeah, that's fine when you make that change, tape it to the bottom of the router, and you're done.
And GRC we've spoken of frequently has a DNS benchmarking tool that will find the fastest DNS for you. Not necessarily the safest, but at least the fastest, because every time you go to a website, there are dozens, if not hundreds, of lookups.
Right.
Every little piece of graphic and text and ad. And so the faster your DNS is, the faster that web page can load.
Right. And that like I said, Cloudflare is 1.1.1.1 and 1.0.0.1.
And so they're testing those as well.
Right. And 9.9.9.9 is the one you just found mm-hmm. Quad9s. And it doesn't hurt to run that DNS benchmark. I did it and discovered that the fastest for me at the time were Google's.
Mm-hmm.
Which is why I changed mine to 8.8.8.8.
You would think it would be your ISP because that's the closest one to you.
But Google's is running on a very much faster machine with lots and lots of storage. So they've already logged millions of websites. So they don't even have to go out and find them. They already know where they are.
Yep.
Sorry about that. Google wound up getting my phone got updated to the latest one. I'm on version 9 now.
The problem is,
it changed all my settings. I just found out. Because normally I had it set up that once I come into the studio from 12 o'clock to 2 o'clock, my phone is silenced and doesn't go anywhere. But I guess I got to change that too.
Guess you got to fix that now. All right, to the phones. Our next caller is Dave. Is Dave still there from Canandaigua, New York? Thanks for being patient, Dave.
Still here.
Okay, what's up?
Is Firefox known to be semi-broken at the moment? Because I'm having trouble. Sometimes when I load a page, it'll come up kind of garbled. Either a three-column site will come up as one or two columns. Sometimes you're looking at the CSS text instead of the page.
When was the last time you updated?
Like yesterday.
Are you on Firefox 59?
No, 61.02 or something here.
Okay, because I know 59 was severely broken.
Yeah.
One of the things you can do is run it in safe mode to see if it's an extension causing your problems.
Yeah, I haven't tried that yet.
Yeah, that...
Hold the option key down while you start.
Right.
That's probably the Alt key on Windows.
Right.
Yeah. Or there's actually a menu item under the help to restart it.
Right.
Yep.
So. Right. And you should do that because often we find, you know, that although a browser is rock solid, you start adding those extensions that do neat things and you start having issues.
Yep.
So I would do that first, and I suspect you're going to find that's where your problem is. So I haven't heard of too many problems with 61, but I did. There were a lot of problems with 59.
Yeah, well, there's been a lot of problems since way back.
Well, yeah.
Keep getting rid of the good stuff and putting garbage in. But.
Well, that's why 70% of the internet now uses Chrome.
Yeah.
They tend to leapfrog each other. That somebody puts in a feature that either everyone loves or everyone hates, and then the other browsers do the same. Every new version that comes out claims to be the fastest at this or that or the other.
Well, Chrome to me is just so visually ugly that I just really can't stand using it.
No, I get it. There are people who love what they love, and I understand that. But
so it looks like 6102 came out on the 8th.
Yeah.
So, did you say that's the one you're running? Okay.
Yep.
Yeah,
so maybe 6103 is due.
Maybe. I haven't heard any main thing. So I would do as Steve suggested and run it without extensions and see what happens.
Will do. Thanks.
Okie doke. Pretty much any browser has extensions nowadays. And as we said, every once in a while, you know, they're from third parties. Every once in a while, something borks and you have to move on. And my suggestion is that... you try running it without extensions if you see a problem. I had that with a couple of things that suddenly websites, every letter of every word was crowded into the first column on the left.
That's an interesting.
It was bug. Weird, and I thought, what is that? And then I ran it without extensions, and it was fine. So I slowly added back all my extensions and found the one that was the problem, and stopped using it. But
and sometimes you can get a malicious extension gets installed from an ad on a website to give you more ads, and typically they aren't written very well, so they can cause other problems.
Yeah. Well, and that is the issue there. Of course,
I've got one. Well, normally you run in Chrome, and all of a sudden now Facebook. If somebody puts up a bunch of pictures and I go to click on it, it'll flash, go back. But yet over on Firefox.
That could be
I haven't had a chance. It just started popping up.
That could be an extension, because I had that problem too, and the extension that was doing it was one that was blocking third-party ads.
Yeah, I got it.
Because those pictures are actually coming from a different website. Facebook has a separate site that they store all the pictures on. And unless you specifically allow that site, the pictures are blocked because it looks like some malicious junk coming from a third-party website.
Oh, you know how you get notices up at the top there? You click on that, and the little thing would come down, and it would just circle and circle and circle. So it's like, I just noticed that the past couple of days that it's like, all right, I got to take the time. When I have the time to go in there and clean out the extension.
Or, what I do is I run Firefox solely for Facebook and everything else on Chrome.
That's what I'm doing right now. I might just leave it on the Firefox and say the heck with it.
Yep, and that way it can't track me in other tabs because those tabs are running on a separate browser. And it's just
Good point.
Safer and more secure. We should probably take a break, you think?
Yeah, we could get into that.
Let's do that. We're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray. There's Matt from Rochester is on the phone. Please be patient, Matt. We'll get to you in just a moment. We'll be back with a whole lot more sound bites on member supported Jazz 90.1.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 25 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites, and we...
I say, I hope the Polka guys have sponsorship spots for our show on theirs.
Yeah, exactly, doggone it. Back to the phones. Our next caller is Matt. Caller is hung up. Dave is going to...
Sorry about that, Matt. Give us a call back.
Check. Sorry, Matt. I don't know what happened there. Sometimes we get to gabbing, and there you have it. That's the way that works. And if you're calling and talking to Dave, he is going to be speaking very low because he's here in the studio with us. But you should speak up. Because Dave is 104 years old, and he won't hear your name correctly if you don't shout it. So definitely make sure that you've got that in your head when you call. He'll be quiet. You should be loud. Back to the phones. Our next caller is John from Fairport, New York. Hi, John. What's up?
This is John, and I just want to let you know that at your call at around 1:20 p.m. today, one of the gentlemen had called in, stated that he had a problem with Firefox. I had a problem last evening. Version 61.0.2 would not display the images on certain websites. So what I did was I looked that up, and apparently I had to do a reset, which is in this menu. It's going to be the three lines in the upper right corner. You click on that, go down to Help, go to Troubleshooting Information, and then select in the upper right corner either Refresh Firefox or Restart with Add-ons Off. I believe that's what Steve had recommended at the time, was the add-ons off, but the refresh actually did the trick, and it did not lose any of my bookmarks or anything.
Oh, excellent point. Thank you, John. That's great. So, Dave, of course, you're still listening, so you can give that a try from the... Now, let me see if I've got this right. From the menu, which is the three little dots in the corner, you select Help, then Troubleshooting Info, and then Refresh.
Yes.
Perfect.
Correct. Yeah, it actually did the trick. You know, Nick, since I'm with you, I wanted to ask you a question, and that is, if somebody made a donation to your website, okay, because I overheard your conversation, how it's becoming less profitable due to the donations coming through as being less.
Right.
If it were, say, like in the $100 range, would you take the ads off for a while? Yeah, I know it sounds goofy, but...
No, it isn't goofy. That's an interesting point. If someone paid me enough money, would I take the ads off? Off the top of my head, I would say certainly. I would take them off for a while. But the question is, what would that while be? Would it be 1 month or 3 months or 6 months? That's a good question. I would do that.
It depends what the cost of hosting is. I once was part of a local computer user group. It has since folded up, and I was paying hosting costs that weren't terribly high, but after like a few years worth of time, the money wasn't coming into the club, so the club had a fold, and so did the website. But for a while, it was okay. It was doable.
Right, and it depends on what you're paying for. And, of course, at the Soundbites website, we've got, 15 years of back shows up there at 2 hours, 65 megs a show. And that they charge you for that kind of storage, too. So $100 doesn't go as far as I'd like it to. But, yeah, I suspect that if somebody paid me enough money, I would then remove the ads for a while.
Okay, well, I'll think about it. Anyway, I wanted to turn my attention to another thing. I was at the MCC presentation for Steve Wozniak when he came to town a few years ago.
Yeah.
Do you anticipate him coming back? Because his presentation was really dynamic, and it was inspiring, and it was great to hear what was on the forefront of technology.
Well, we should probably hear that from the person who brought him to town last time.
Yeah. We still have DVDs for sale of that, if you're interested.
There you go.
Well, Kalana is there. And you actually know me, but you probably recognize my voice.
Recognize you, yeah.
But maybe not my face, but that's okay. I was an Apple Cider member for many years,
and
I've kind of moved on. But in terms of that, I wouldn't mind... paying money to see Steve Wozniak again. It was great.
I know he did come to RIT a couple of years ago. He's the kind of guy that you ask him if his schedule is free, he probably would.
Well,
so the bigger issue is coordinating it at our end here and facilities and publicity and that type of stuff.
Absolutely, absolutely. Well, gentlemen, that's the end of my batch of questions. I want to thank you very much. I do try to listen every week, and I am a member.
Thanks, John. We appreciate that very much. Thank you.
Bye-bye for now.
Bye-bye. Yeah, that's an interesting question, John.
I think that was the 25th anniversary of Apple Cider when we had Wozcom. And I had him sign my Apple IIe.
Yep.
And then we decided, oh, we'll throw it on eBay for $1,000. No one will pay that much for it. It was gone in a day.
Yeah, you're missing a comma in there, I think.
A little... I had one
or
comma.
Zero,
at least,
rather.
Yeah. And so I'm a little annoyed that I lost my Apple IIe. It has a signature on it, too, but
right.
No one would pay that much for an old Apple IIe. No. Yeah, they will.
Yeah, people will pay that for it to begin with, and then it's signed by Woz, so yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Steve from Greece, New York. What's up, Steve?
Good afternoon, gentlemen. that includes you, Nick.
Oh, thank you so much.
I have one comment to make about those codes you put out there for to stop the robocalls and all that other stuff.
Right.
I mean, I did it myself. I liked it, but the caveat is you won't get that call from the trash company that they're going to be picking up a day later. You won't be getting the weather alert. You won't be getting the...
school cancellation notice.
There's a lot of government things that you won't be getting because they don't think they're talking to anybody either.
Right, right. No, I agree with that. Absolutely. I you're right. I hadn't thought about that because I don't get any of those because I'm old now. But yes, I get that. You have to be a little careful how you do those things. You're right. Thanks.
I do like to also say how much I appreciate your show and how you allow the conversation to go where it needs to go. I never knew about the router issue.
Ah.
I'm having a problem with Google Chrome won't render TVGuide.com page at all. I can't read it, but both Firefox and Edge do. So now I know to go look at extensions. And this is all stuff that I would have never known if I didn't listen to your show. And you allow it to go where it should go. I appreciate it.
Thank you. I appreciate hearing that. Because I'm on the TVGuide.com site right now, and it looks fine. So it's clearly an extension because I'm using Chrome myself, Chrome OS, actually. So it's clearly an extension on your machine stopping it.
And I'd have never known that if I hadn't listened to your show.
There you go. Another unsolicited testimonial, ladies and gentlemen. Thanks, Steve.
It's just a verbal testimony, not the money.
Yeah.
And thank you very much. I'll talk to you later.
Thanks. Have fun. Bye-bye. That's another unsolicited testimonial. We're honored and delighted to present to you the kind of information that we do. And it is freewheeling. And unlike a lot of other shows, the calls we take are completely unscreened. We'll talk to pretty much anybody about any computer subject. Notice I said any computer subject. But we will be happy to do that. And I believe we finally have back Matt from Rochester, New York. Hi, Matt. What's up?
Hi, guys. So, listen, I have a question, but could I ask, why can't we listen to the program on the phone while we're waiting instead of a busy signal?
Because of the way this phone system is set up, this is actually, I believe it's because this is the school district's phone system, and they determine what you hear on a busy, on a whole.
This is not, like most radio stations, you know, we're the only talk show that's on the station.
Yeah.
So if you go to any major radio station, you know, they're going to have a separate phone system that's there. We'd have screen, you know, it'd pop up on a screen with your name and that, and you could listen to it while you're doing that. Like I say, we're piggybacking off of the school system's phone system, so we're not that high tech as far as that aspect of it.
I always thought it was better to be listening to your conversation.
Well, that's why we tell you just turn on the radio low. But once we answer the phone, that you turn the radio down so that, you know, we don't hear it in the background because it echoes back through.
Right.
Okay, thanks.
All righty. Yep. Have a great day.
Well, wait. Now, I think you had a question, too.
Now the question, please.
Yeah.
I have a Netgear modem, and the upstream light would flash red. So I reset it by pulling the plug, and I did that a couple of times, and it still went back to its old ways. So I called Apple, and they got into my router also, and then they, for some reason, I didn't ask, but for some reason they changed my network name, I maintain the same password, but I find now my brother printer wasn't working, and I went through, I exchanged the printer, I thought it was a printer, and I tried to set it up, and they have a wizard, and it finds my network and everything, but it won't accept my password. I've gone into Keychain, and it tells me what the password is, and it's the same as I'm using. And I was just wondering, do you have any? Could you give me some insight of what might be going on?
In this particular case, not without actually seeing it, I'm afraid. If it's definitely the same password and you're using the correct upper and lower case and everything else,
and you can log back in to the Netgear router page by typing that password, not by letting Keychain fill it in. But the reason to the
Netgear page, router page.
Right. I would be very suspicious that you didn't actually call Apple. You called some fake tech support company. Because Apple wouldn't help you with a Netgear router.
Yeah, they wouldn't.
And they usually don't do remote tech support. They have you bring it into the store.
I called Apple because I recently bought a Mac Mini. And, you know, the support goes along with it for a while.
And you used the phone number that came with the computer? You didn't just Google a phone number?
Yes.
Okay.
I have the support number.
800 SOS Apple. I always like that.
Another thing that might be interesting for everybody that's listening, I called Brother because I thought maybe it was a Brother issue. And of course, you talk to somebody overseas. But anyway, he wanted to put a program on my computer so he could see what's going on, and I'll let him do it. And then he told me, well, I'm going to do a test. He did a test, so-called, and I watched it on his screen. What he was doing is testing the speed of my computer. And he says, well, it says it's using 1.5 gigs, and it's slow, I want to put a program on that will clean it up. And at that point, he says, no thanks, Jack. And I hung up on a guy and took every... I put his program into the trash. Have you ever heard of anything crazy like that before?
Yes, that's very, very common with fake tech support trying to steal your money. They log into your computer, they get your passwords, they get your bank account numbers, and steal your money.
I would change some passwords if I were you.
I looked for the
Matt.
The number that they...
Matt! We have to take a break. Please stay on the line. We'll talk to you when we come back. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, Matt from Rochester, and you. It's 39 minutes after the hour at Soundbites, member-supported Jazz 90.1.
I'm Steve Wozniak, and you're listening to Soundbites.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more Soundbites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 43 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites, and Matt is still on the line. Okay, Matt.
Yes. So anyway, that was sort of crazy. Really, it really got me a little upset because I had looked for the brother website for the number, and so that's that.
A lot of companies want you to email them rather than phone call.
Pardon me.
A lot of companies want you to email them rather than do a phone call. Cost more to provide telephone support, so that may be why you didn't find a legitimate Brother phone number.
Okay. So anyway, would you be able to tell me how can I change my network password?
You have to log back into the router console.
The actual router itself.
With your browser, usually Safari. You have to know the IP address of the router, which is usually 192.168.1.1. And then you log in with the username and password. Now, if you did actually get a legitimate Apple rep doing this, then it should be the password they told you.
I used the same password.
Right.
Right, and it worked on the website for the router itself.
Yeah, but how do I get to the? To the router, I mean.
You open up your web browser like Safari and you type the router's address in the address bar. It's usually 192.168.1.1, but...
Well, how do I find that number?
You have to know it ahead of time. Or if you go to System Preferences and then Network,
yes.
Then you can go to your Wi-Fi setting,
yes.
Under advanced, it will tell you what the router address is.
Yes. And then I do what?
And then type that address into the browser. So
where you would normally type google.com.
Okay, got it.
Yep. And then you log into your router. You can change the name of the wireless network. You can change the name of the password of the network. And that's why your printer fell off the network in the first place, because if they change the name of the network, then your printer's looking for the wrong network, and it can't print to it.
Right.
Okay. It found the network that they had changed to. But that's wrong, right?
Well, no. There are two passwords. One is the password to get into the admin section of the router, and the other is the password that you use to connect to the network from another device.
Often those are the same, but they don't have to be.
They don't have to be. And if they changed one, they didn't change the other. Now they're different.
That could be. Right.
So I'll try to change everything back to original. And that should work, maybe?
Yeah.
Might.
Yeah.
You may end up needing to take the computer and the router into a legitimate service shop. I know our shop does house calls. It's often easier when you're dealing with networking things.
Right.
But to have someone look at it that you can trust to be there rather than just an anonymous person at the end of the phone.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, I hope that's a lesson for everybody.
I think so, too. All right, Matt, we've got people stacked up. We got to go.
Thank you very much.
Thanks so much.
So, Dave is bringing the next call up.
Right.
In general, if you're looking for product support for some brand of product, don't just Google Macintosh support or Netgear support. Go to netgear.com. Go to brother.com. Go to the website to find their number.
Right.
Because if you just Google a phone number, or worse, Yahoo or Bing, one of the other search engines, you're going to get anyone who paid to have an ad for that phone number.
And call themselves Apple support.
Right. We support Apples, and we'll steal the rest of your money, too.
Right. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Bob from Pittsford, New York. Hi, Bob. What's up?
Yeah, hi. How are you? Can you hear me fine?
Yep. Can you hear us?
Okay. I have an older Linksys EA3500 router, 2.4 and 5 gigahertz, and I'm running basically nine systems on it that I'm connected to. One is a 4K TV, one is a Roku, which is the only one that's giving me problem because I like to do it on the 5 gigahertz, and the signal strength is not quite what I'd like. I run a laptop, a thermometer, two cell phones, a printer, and another bedroom TV.
Here's one of the problems with 5G, the 5 gigahertz band. It's more powerful, but it's shorter distance.
Yes, I'm aware of that.
And I
want to buy a new router. I don't believe I need, for my 2,500-square-foot house, I really don't think I need a mesh system. And so the comment is, should I get a tri-band router, or what are one or two routers that you would recommend for me to buy?
The thing I would recommend for anybody is think about the line of sight from whatever your device is to the router. If there's pipes in the way or a refrigerator or that sort of thing, you're going to have a problem no matter what you get. But given that, many of the mid-price routers have antennas, which gives them a better throw.
Yeah, my old Linksys EA3500, which may be 8 years old, or maybe only six, but it has no antenna on it. It's built in.
Right, and the ones with the separate antennas have a better throw and a better signal. So,
but they don't look as clean.
But they don't look as cool. Yeah. But they're better.
Yeah.
And the newer ones now are 802.11ac.
Yeah, I wouldn't spend the money on an N router. The AC routers are faster, longer range. They'll last more into the future than an older N router would.
Right, so an AC router, 802.11ac with antennas is probably your best bet.
Just an AC router. Any brand is good?
Most of the brands that are out there now are pretty good. Make sure that it's updated. Look in the manual on how to do an update. Do one if it's available. I check mine once a month. I just have a reminder that comes up and says, check your router. It's easy to do. It takes a couple of minutes. You're pushing buttons and you're done. I mean, you're clicking buttons on a website and you're done. And I would do that immediately.
You think getting a mesh system for the house is probably an overkill?
For a 2,500 square foot house, depending on how it's laid out, it probably is.
You could start with the base of a mesh, and then later on, if you decide you need more, then you get the remotes.
Right.
But get one that could be mesh capable without buying, you know, three or four boxes at the
right.
moment.
Right. Okay, I thank you very much.
All right, good luck, Bob.
Bye.
Yeah, the problem with any sort of router is that radio is mysterious. And because we don't see it, and because we don't know what's in our walls often, and what's running, the pipes that are running, et cetera, knowing exactly how and where to place your router and what kind of signal strength you're going to get. We had that at home. There's a Roku box in our kitchen, and where it was sitting, it was getting a very poor signal. I raised it a foot up by putting it on top of the cable box, and all of a sudden, the signal was amazing. Okay.
Yeah, especially kitchens with all the metal.
Right.
We wish that routers could auto-update themselves, so you didn't have to worry about it. But in the weirdness in the computer anti-hacking laws, it's against the law for them to reach into your router and update it.
Right, exactly.
All so
right,
they can send you a notice that it needs to be updated,
right.
But you have to do it.
Right. Next caller, Tom from Brighton, New York. What's up, Tom?
Hi. Tell me, is there a conflict between Avast and Malwarebytes? Because I got a message from Avast the other day saying that Malwarebytes was an invalid program, or they were flagging it as malware, essentially.
Right. Right. They often do that.
If you have Avast AV only, it's usually okay. But if you do the whole Avast suite that tries to do anti-malware too, that can be an issue.
Right. It catches the signatures that are built into Malwarebytes and says, oh, I'm detecting the bad signatures. This must be a bad program.
How do you stop that?
I think in Avast...
Set a whitelist?
You can set a whitelist. Right? You can whitelist something and say this is fine.
And they'll probably update themselves to not detect that in the future as well.
Okay. Yeah, I just have the Avast antivirus running. I don't have the suite running. So.
Right.
But they've been pretty compatible up until now, but just like a few days ago.
Do you get an update and somebody screws something up at one of the two companies and boom, there you go for a while.
Okay. Well, thanks a lot.
Yep. Thanks.
Bye.
Yeah,
and
fun.
You generally want to have both an antivirus and an anti-malware because they're two separate issues that both need to be scanned for. We've seen that viruses in general are on a downturn because they're hard to write and they're expensive to propagate.
You really are.
And they really didn't accomplish that much other than, you know, going in and erasing some files, whoopee-doo. The guys that are doing stuff now are looking to make money. And viruses never really made anybody money, whereas the spyware and malware, if they can, you know, collect information and then resell it to other spammers, they're turning a profit. Viruses never really did.
In fact, the latest trends now are the fake antivirus messages. The bad guys don't even have to write a virus. They just have to write an ad that says you have a virus.
Yeah, right.
And people will call the phone number thinking it's tech support. And enough people get tricked by it that they can make a very good living on it.
Yeah.
In fact, they're hiring call centers now to answer the phone for them.
That's exactly right. Speaking of all of that, I had an idea that John from Fairport put in my head. I might let somebody sponsor one of my websites for a while.
Yeah.
Sponsor it for a month, 2 months, 3 months,
six months,
a year.
Underwriting, then, they call that in the nonprofit radio business here.
That's right. You can underwrite my websites. I think I'm going to set that up. I think that's a heck of an idea. Thanks, John. I'll be setting that up on a couple of my websites. See what comes of that. And with that note, which I believe was an F sharp, probably an F flat. That tells us we're done for another week. I want to thank every one of you who called in. I want to apologize to those of you to whom we did not get. When the calls pile up at the end of the show, we often don't necessarily get to everybody. So please call earlier next week. I know, but that's kind of what you got to do if you're going to get in. And don't go away. George is coming in to play the best German music you'll hear all week. We'll be back next week with a whole lot more of the longest-running computer show in the known universe. So for Dave Enright, for Steve Ray, I'm Nick Francesco. We are the longest-running computer show. It's Soundbites, right here on the truly great and truly grateful to you that we are member-supported Jazz 90.1. And we will see you in just 166 hours.